read all of the verses from 8 to 12. We chant them together. Amani dvamadam bhitvam ahamsa kshantirajavam acharyo pasanam shaucham stayam atma vinigraha indriyate shivaragyam anahamkara evacha janma mrityu jara vyadhi dhuka doshanu darshanam asadhyatma jnana nityatvam tatva jnanartha darshanam etaj jnanam inti proknam ajnanam yadatonyata. Translation. Humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization, and a philosophical search for the absolute truth, all these I declare to be knowledge, and besides these, whatever there may be, is ignorance. So this is Krishna's full description of what is jnanam, or knowledge. And there's 20 items listed here. And according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says 17 of them are meant for devotees and jnanis. 17 of them are both for devotees and for jnanis. And then two of them, the last two, are specifically for jnanis, technically. Technically, they're for jnanis. And then the one, the last one, which is item number 16 in the list, and that is unalloyed devotion to me. That's only for devotees. So in this way, he breaks down this list. Prabhupada comments that this is the process of knowledge. Of course, the process of knowledge includes some qualities like cleanliness and things like that. Of course, cleanliness is also it's a practice, practicing being clean. It's like a state of existence that you attempt to develop. But you could also say it's like qualities. But then there's like, some of them can be seen as both. Like nonviolence, tolerance, but approaching a bona fide spiritual master, that's, some practice or some item that you perform. And there's different things like this. Understanding the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease. It's not a quality, it's the actual process. So, taken together as a process, this process of knowledge is meant for that this process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men as being the interaction of the field of activity. But actually, this is the real process of knowledge. If one accepts this process, then the possibility of approaching the absolute truth exists. This is not the interaction of the 24 elements as described before. This is actually the means to get out of the entanglement of those elements. The embodied soul is entrapped by the body, which is a casing made of the 24 elements. And the process of knowledge is described here as a means to get out of it. Of all the descriptions of the process of knowledge, the most important point is described in the first line of the 11th verse, Maichanyanyanya Yogina Bhakti Avyabhicharini. The process of knowledge terminates in unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. So if one does not approach or is not able to approach the transcendental service of the Lord, then the other 19 items are of no particular value. If one takes to devotional service, the other 19 items automatically develop within him. Now, someone asked me the other day, because we were talking about other qualities from chapter 12, which come from bhakti. And sometimes we hear that you don't have to perform anything extraneous, endeavor, other than just devotional service. We just focus on devotion and then all of these nice qualities come. Yes, yes, ti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana saver gunastatra samasuteshwara haro abhaktase kutau mahadguna manore tenasadi davatumahi. So yes, it's true. If we should focus on bhakti, this is the main thing. We get pure devotional qualities by becoming a pure devotee. But to be a pure devotee is not so easy. And it doesn't happen overnight. So, in the meantime, while we're waiting to become pure devotees, which may take 30, 40, or 50 years, we should try to develop some of these qualities. Not extraneously, not that we have to go to a finishing school and walk around with books on our head or try to speak this and this and, you know, study different languages and so forth. But we can understand, first of all, what are the qualities that we want. We should at least know that much. And then we should understand what are the details of what they mean. For an example, like here it says, understanding of freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest. So, you know, people can misunderstand this. They can think, yes, you just throw the wife and children out the window, and now everything's no entanglement. Which, you know, we've seen, in a sense, people have done that. But Prabhupada comments, and he explains what that means in the commentary. He says, as for detachment from children, wife, and home, it is not meant that one should have no feeling for these. They are actually natural objects of affection. But when they are not favorable to spiritual progress, then one should not be attached to them. In other words, if they're favorable, if they're devotees and they're engaging in devotional practices and they are willing to follow the devotee who's the leader of the family, then that's fine. Then as Prabhupada says later, he says, so he talks all about family life, how to make it very happy, that the family members come together and chant the holy name, they offer bhoga, they take prasadam, they do deity worship, and he says these four things make one very happy. He should train his family members in this way. They sit down together in the evening, chant the holy name, and in this way, they develop Krishna consciousness following these four principles. It's mentioned here in the commentary. So, then there is no need to change from family life to renounced life. But if it is not congenial, if it's not favorable for spiritual advancement, then family life should be abandoned. So there's a principle there. You accept the favorable and you reject the unfavorable. But even then, if the family members are not so favorable, one's still duty-bound to maintain them and so forth. But then there's some detachment, more detachment there, right? Because they're unsubmissive, they're, you know, engaged in evil activities, demoniac activities. So then how much can one be attached to them? Naturally, he'll develop detachment from them because of their sinful activities and their pride, and their arrogance, and their, you know, rebellious nature. So the devotee cannot feel so much attachment for such type of living entities, naturally. So, first thing, we have to understand what are these things, then we have to understand how to apply them, you know, in an intelligent, balanced way. And then, we can try to brush aside anything which hinders us developing those qualities, like being filthy or, you know, being proud. When we see ourselves doing that, we should reject that. And then, you know, gradually there is a devotional cultivation of these activities which is not extraneous to the process, not independent of the process of devotional service. It's part and parcel. Because when we see in the Bhagavatam great saints being tolerant, being simple, being humble, etc., etc., they're approaching a guru, they're doing all these 20 things, then we can learn. We follow in their footsteps. We don't imitate them, but we follow them. So in this way, it's not that we just say, oh yes, I just do my chanting and my bhakti, and all of these things will just, you know, fall from the sky, and like this. Yeah, okay, if we become pure devotee, we attain bhava bhakti and prema bhakti, then all of these things will sprout, you know, they will just explode. Good qualities will come. But how long will it take? How many people can we see? Or, you know, when we chant the holy name, tears are coming, hairs are standing on end. So these good qualities are, when we develop bhakti, real bhakti, these qualities, they follow bhakti. They search out the person that has bhakti. You know, and you don't have to do anything. That's true. But we don't have that kind of bhakti. So in order to be a religious person, in order to associate with the Vaishnavas properly, in order to enhance our own bhakti, we should try to follow, we should try to develop all of these things. It can be very helpful for us, for our preaching, for our association, like this. We can't just reject these things. Yes, these will come automatically. Prabhupada gave a lecture. He said here that Mahaprabhu said that we should chant Hare Krishna because in this age it's very difficult to follow the process of knowledge. If we chant Hare Krishna, knowledge will come and the qualities will come, like Amanitvam. He says this means that, he quotes from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Amanitvam, it's the first item. It means humility. Why is it the first item? Because it's the most, it's very important. In order to continue on the path, humility is essential also. And Prabhupada mentions it in the beginning and at the end of the commentary. And Mahaprabhu said, Trinadapi Sunichana, that in order to chant Hare Krishna, you have to be humble. So the process is chanting Hare Krishna. But even to do that, we have to have one of these qualities, humility. We have to develop a little humility even before we begin the process of chanting Hare Krishna. So he says also this humility means that I'm not this matter, I'm not this body. This is part of being humble, is understanding that I'm a spirit soul, I'm very small. Bala grasha dabhagyasya shatangsha sarashatmaka jiva shukshma sarupo yam sakyanti tohi chitkana. The living entity is so small, you can't even count it. You can't even measure it. Asankhyatito. Sankhyatito, it's above measurement. This chitkana, this spirit, so small. 1/10,000 is the tip of a hair. But that is just to give an idea. So one who knows I'm like this, and it's that can help him to be humble if he knows I'm so small. So this is part and parcel of it. So if we chant Hare Krishna, we'll realize, you know, I'm not this body. And that humility will come also from that. So then, Prabhupada says, humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. And because people who want to be honored by others, it means that they very much identify with the body. Because the honor is just for the body. So if they're into honor, it means that they identify with the body very much. And that's ignorance. Then non-violence, ahimsa, he says, this generally means not killing or destroying the body. But actually it means not to put others into distress. And if you don't give people knowledge, transcendental knowledge, you're putting them into distress, in ignorance. So that's also ignorance. Tolerance means to be practiced to bear insult and dishonor from others. And when we're preaching, we'll naturally be insulted. It's the nature of the material world. Simplicity means that without any diplomacy, you should be very straightforward in your dealings, frank, open, and honest. And that even so much you can disclose the truth even to an enemy. That means you don't have to hide things. If you have all of these things hidden, different motives, or when I come to him I deal like this, and when I'm with him I deal like this, and then when I'm talking to him I have to hide this other thing, then it makes life so complicated. You can't chant the holy name, and you can't meditate on the Lord, and you can't pray, because you got all these things you have to always be aware of. And it makes your mind very complicated. He says, approaching the spiritual master with all humility and offering him services so that he will be pleased to bestow his blessings upon the disciple. So he's linking simplicity with approaching the guru, because it's the next item. Because the guru is a representative of Krishna, if he bestows any blessings upon his disciple, that will make the disciple immediately advanced without the disciples following the regular principles. Usually devotees query about what does it mean. So does it mean that, you know, he's smoking dope and, you know, having illicit sex and he's pleasing the guru? But it means that he, without long practice of Vaidhi Sadhana, he's making advancement very quickly without long time of chanting, long time of archana, and all of the other processes. See, there it means regular principles doesn't mean the four sinful things. It means the other principles. He says, or regular principles will be easier for one who has served the spiritual master without reservation. And cleanliness, of course, we know there's two kinds, internal and external. Again, Prabhupada chants the full Maha Mantra in the commentary. Steadiness means to be determined to progress in spiritual life. Self-control means not accepting anything which is detrimental to advancement in spiritual life. It means controlling the senses, especially the tongue. False ego, he discusses. Anyway, you can read, there's so many nice points Prabhupada makes. And in the Hito Upadesh, it mentions that these a particular combination of eight qualities are very, very rare. Charity with sweet words. Knowledge without pride. Valor, which means courage in battle, especially, with forbearance. Or it means not giving into anger. Being patient. So to find someone who's very courageous and bold, but at the same time, he never allows himself to get angry. This is very rare. And wealth, someone who's wealthy and he also has a very charitable, kind disposition. So Hito Upadesha has these, the combination of these four is very rare. But a devotee can have all of these simultaneously. So Prabhupada summarizes in the last paragraph. Is this sound on? Or what's going on here? If the lights are on, this should be working now, so I don't have to shout. My voice is almost finished now. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. You can turn these down a little bit, so it's a little. Turn it down. Okay. The other one, sir. Okay. That's good. I know. Okay, so the last paragraph. Beginning from practicing humility up to the point of realization of the Supreme Truth, this process is like a staircase beginning from the ground floor and going up to the top floor. Now, on this staircase, there are so many people who have reached the first floor, the second, the third floor, etc. But unless one reaches the top floor, which is understanding Krishna, then he's at a lower stage of knowledge. If anyone wants to compete with God and at the same time make advancement in spiritual life, he will be frustrated. This actually comes from Madhvacharya. This, he mentioned this in a commentary in Bhagavatam, I think. It is clearly stated that without humility, understanding is not truly possible. To think oneself God is most puffed up. Although the living entity is always being kicked by the stringent laws of material nature, he still thinks, I am God, because of ignorance. The beginning of knowledge, therefore, is amanitva, humility. One should be humble and know that he is subordinate to the Supreme Lord. Due to rebellion against the Lord, one becomes subordinate to material nature. One must know and be convinced of this truth. So you can rebel against the Lord, but you end up bowing down to Mayadevi. So you have to be subordinate anyway. So you might as well admit that you have to submit yourselves and submit to Krishna, who's a much nicer boss than Mayadevi. Okay, so that's the end of this section. Are there any questions or comments? Yeah. Alright. No, yeah, of course. Yeah, it means the mercy of the Guru. Because generally, well, one can come to Bhava Bhakti in two ways. Rigid execution of Vaidhi Sadhana, or Sadhana, or any Sadhana, Bhakti Sadhana, and the special mercy of Krishna or his pure devotee. So if one serves the Guru and pleases him, then he gets his mercy and he advances. Lord of goodness brings you to knowledge. Sattvam sanjayate jnanam, Krishna said. You develop goodness, you get knowledge from that. So that's all right. It's, you know, I mean, yeah, the person's in the conditioned state, so he's developing these processes. Yeah, some of them, like cleanliness and so forth, it's in the mode of goodness. But the cleanliness can become shuddha-sattva also, when you mix it with bhakti. So it's not, it doesn't, in other words, if the mode of goodness liberates you from the encasement and limitations of the 24 elements, then it's a process of knowledge which brings you out from the interaction of these 24 things. But while you're here, you have to, you know, use your body, use your mind, and do certain things. And it does come overnight, suddenly. It's not going to just drop all of these 20 things. It's gradual. It's very gradual. It takes a long, long time. So in the meantime, like I said, I mean, if Krishna... If all we have to do is chant and we don't have to develop, why is Krishna telling these things? He also told them in chapter 12, which is talking about bhakti. So he wants us to know what they are. That means we should know that this is what we want to achieve. This is what Vaishnava means. Yeah, we have to have an idea, and then we have to push aside the things which stop that, and anything which can help us develop these good qualities, then we should do that. So the mode of goodness is our modus operandi. It's our via medium for working, for acting, and exchanging with devotees in so many different ways. Because actually, with Burjan Prabhu, he Prabhupada was giving a lecture, and then at the end he said, "Well, I thought that." Devotee is above the mode of goodness. And Prabhupada said, yes, but he acts in goodness. That's how he behaves himself. So, as I said, well, we're not doing anything extraneous or independent of bhakti. Right? We're doing chanting, worshipping, hearing and chanting, worshipping the Guru, all these things. But we know what these qualities are. And we want them. Right? And we also, don't we practice humility, bowing down? Suppose somebody says that, well, I'm told that all we have to do is chant, and automatically being humble will be humble. So why should I bow down? This is just external practice, it's artificial, because right now I don't feel like bowing down. So why should I bow down? I'll just chant, and then when I feel like bowing, when I'm actually humble, then it will come naturally, Prabhu. Right? You can say so many things like this. No, we bow down, we serve the Vaishnavas, we offer our obeisances, we're doing all of these things. We're practicing to be humble. Because right now we still think I'm this body, therefore we're into honor and dishonor, and we're very proud, and so we're practicing these things, but this is, they're also within the pure practices of pure bhakti. Because Vishwanath Chakravarti says that they're for devotees and for jnanis. So they're also devotional. Because bhakti yoga incorporates the lower qualities of the other subordinate systems. Jnana yoga, karma yoga, ashtanga yoga. Bhakti yoga has all of those things. Yes, there's many of the same things. Simplicity, tolerance, cleanliness. No, there's 20 here. It was a different list. Anything else? Yes. Simple means not a diplomat. Straightforward, open, honest, and frank. And that's for Vaishnava. Vaishnava should be like that. Say. Well, I mean, generally devotees, they don't have so many enemies. They avoid envious people. So, I mean, if they meet demons, the devotee will still say, "You should chant the name of God. Purify your life. Why are you wasting your life?" The person, "You get a job, whatever," you know, roaring something. But the devotee will still be some. He said, "All right, sir. You know, you're a great man. I'm a fool. I'll go away. But please chant the name of God." It's simple. Just like Prahlad was also simple, and his father was trying to kill him, he thought, "My father's just joking with me." He couldn't even imagine that my father would try to kill me. He was simple. That's pure, simple. It means pure, actually. Or not crooked. Possible. Krishna says to Uddhava, "Yadrichayo matkatado jati sharastu yapaman na nirvino nati sakto." Nirvino nati sakto bhakti yoga sasirida. Nirvino means he shouldn't be too much disgusted with this material world. He should be a little bit disgusted, not too much. And nati sakto, he should not be too much attached. If he hates too much people and, you know, and the world, Nietzsche, in his book No Exit, he wrote, "Hell is other people." Hates people. Or Schopenhauer, he hated his mother, he hated women. He was a misogynist. He never had any relationship with women. He was, not because he was a pure Brahmachari, but because he hated women. Because his mother used to beat him and she never loved him. And his heart was like stone, you know. So if someone's disgusted with relationships, hates people, then how can he love God? Impossible. So it can be too much. But it means a healthy balance of understanding, yeah, this is our real problem, birth, death, disease, and old age. This is our real problem, how to get free from these things. Because the taking birth and dying is painful, and in between old age and disease, it's also painful. So it makes one sober to the realities. One should be sober and understand these things. If he's an illusion, he thinks that life is a bowl of cherries. Dum 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 dum. He goes on with life, you know. He'll get smashed, just like some fool. You know, he won't understand the realities of life. Yeah, it has to be balanced. Yes. But it's like our process ultimately is God realization. It's not the goal of our process just to understand the self. Self-realization. Tattva Gyanartha Darshana. Adhyatma. Adhyatma Gyan. Right. That comes automatically. Right. Muktir mukulitanjali sevate sman kamarta kama tataya samaya pratiksha. So when one does bhakti, then the liberation and this kind of adhyatma gyan, she's like a maidservant at the front door. Automatically that will come. And that's just one comment that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur makes. And we can see that because this last six chapters, the emphasis is Gyan. Right? So there's things for Gyanis. It's there. It's, as I said, it's part of our process. But we also see devotion there. And Prabhupada comments that this is the most important thing. Of all of the items. Well, that's because Prabhupada's defining it according to Gaudiya Vaishnavism. He's not defining it according to Jnana Yogis. So, yeah, the Jnani, he realizes I'm not the body, but he can never realize that I'm a spirit, I'm a servant of God. Unless he comes in contact with a devotee. And Prabhupada comments that, you know, this ultimately it means understanding what is the real sarup. But the Jnanis, they can understand I'm not this body. And they're free from the false ego in that sense. Yeah. So, I mean, this is not in the process of knowledge, again. But as far as we're concerned, we want to develop the Vijnana realization. And that means not just talking about being a soul, but acting on the platform of soul. Or a servant of Krishna. That means we're willing to do everything and anything to help others to come to Krishna. And that we care about other people because we see that they're also connected with Krishna. So one thinks that I'm a servant of Krishna and I'm eager to serve all of the other Vaishnavas and do whatever it takes to bring people to Krishna. And that's what a preacher is. He preaches, he has his realization. And as one preaches more and more, then he realizes this more and more, and he feels some kinship with the people that he preaches to, and tries to help them. Not that we just, stay in our ivory tower, just, you know, studying shastras, and then occasionally descend and, you know, give lecture. No, we should be with the people, help them, serve them, talk with them, make friends with them. Like, I was in Poland once and I met a devotee in Warsaw. His name was Mahashringa Das. He was a grihasta. He moved to Mayapur with his family. And before he was doing Food for Life program. And when he got to Mayapur, I guess by the time I went there and saw him, it was a couple of years, so he learned a little Bengali, enough to kind of get around and talk to the villagers. And he started going to all the villages in the area and preaching to people and doing programs and satsangs in people's homes, things like this. And And even the chokidars in Mayapur Project, the ones that we hire that are standing around with their police uniforms, or their, you know, their uniforms, they he comes up to them and he invites them to his house. He invites them to his house. He encourages them, you know, take a shower, freshen up, you know, cool off, just relax, sit them down. They take a shower, then he sits them in a big comfortable chair, and then he says, oh, you know, I have a nice CD player, I like to play this newest bhajan for you. Puts on headphones with 8-track, and he puts on you know, Vyasaki's latest CD, and then the, you know, the guy's like listening to this music, he feels very comfortable sitting down, and then he invites them to the table, has a big feast, gives prasadam to this man, and then later he talks with him, gives him beads, he preaches to him, and then the chokidar becomes so overwhelmed by the devotee's kindness and his care that he starts chanting. And now this Mahashringa has got all of the chokidars around Mayapur chanting japa. If you walk around, before they used to just stand there, and they used to think very bad about the devotees. Actually, the local people in there in Navadvipa or in Mayapur, they think that it's kind of like a corporation. They just got big money, and they kind of like a show of devotion, and they're just collecting big money for. They think of it in like a very material way. They didn't respect the devotees very much, especially the chokidars. You know. So he said that the chokidar said, "You are so humble. You are a pure devotee. You really care about me." And it's so nice that you're helping me this way. I will chant for you. I'll do it, you know. And then Mahashringa said, but if you think I'm pure devotee, I have nothing. These gurus and sannyasis, they're 100 times more advanced than me. They are real devotees. And then the person, he developed respect for all of the members of ISKCON. And then these men go to their homes and they say, oh, he did this, and then he gave me beads, he gave me prasadam, da 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 da. And now I think ISKCON is very good. And so he's got all these guys chanting japa, you know, they're standing around their uniforms together, the bead bag now. And they're becoming devotees. He's making them into devotees. And once he told me that he was coming back from a village late at night, around 10:30, 11 o'clock, and he has a bicycle, so he's riding his bicycle back to the temple from the program, and he saw this old lady struggling with a big bag of vegetables. She was sometimes pulling it on her back, and she was all hunched over, and then sometimes she put it on the ground and just pull it like this. An old, skinny old lady, you know. And so he stopped, and he thought, how can I let this old woman struggle with this big, you know, 40-kilo bag of vegetables? And he said, he came to her and said, Mataji, please, you can't do this. This is terrible. I will help you. And I have a bicycle. He put the vegetables on the bicycle, and then he walked with the lady all the way, 2 miles all the way to her village, right? And the lady was, oh, you're so kind, why are you doing this? And he said, you're my mother. How can I let my own mother, you know, lug a big bag like this? I can never do this. I must help you. So he put the vegetables on his bicycle. He's walking. He walked 2 miles, and then then he drove back and took rest maybe 12 o'clock, you know. He spent the extra hour or whatever it took. So this lady was like the senior lady of the village, you know, very respected by it. So she was glorifying the devotees. She said, this person is a pure devotee. He helped me. He walked, he took my bag of vegetables all the way from his temple, from the main road. And this boy is so nice, like my own, he's better than my own son. These people in ISKCON, with them, talk to them, because as I was walking around, we were talking to people who are very friendly. The devotee I was with, we were conversing with these people, and they are so friendly. They like us, you know. And if we just try a little bit to show that we care about them, give them a little prasadam, and then even help them in their own yard doing the work, If we just do that, even just one time, they'll never forget it. And then they'll feel so indebted, so grateful. They'll come to us. I asked them, how many of the people in the neighborhood have come to our Sunday feast? They said, maybe 3 or 4. But there's hundreds of people that we're in the middle of a residential area there in Zagreb. And not only in Zagreb, but all so many places. Right? How many of them come to the Sunday feast? Very few, hardly any. Why? But if we would go out and we would help them and we'd, you know, do all these things. Imagine if we came just for 1 hour and helped them dig the yard, pick a few apples from the tree, pull a few potatoes out of the ground for this. They would feel so much. They would be so indebted. They'll think, these people are pure. These people are religious. They're really holy men. They care about us. I'll come to the Sunday feast. And they're just this simple thing. This is realization. We've become so overcomplicated, and so our whole culture and our movement has become too complicated and too much aloof from everyone. Somehow we're just so much far away from everyone that they can't relate to us, and then we wonder why they don't come to our temple. So I was telling, when I went to Zagreb, I was telling them, this is, we have to do this. And the president was going, yeah, you're right. Because it makes sense. It's true. I know it's true. You just do this once a month even. It will change the whole situation. Just like Prabhupada, when he was here in Radhadamodar, he was telling some friends, he said, I'm going to go to the West. I'm going to preach there. I'm going to start a student hostel. And then they said, how are you going to do it? What are you going to do? I'm going to bring Bhagavatam with me. I'm going to have them chant. I'll bring students in. Yeah, but they're malechas. They eat meat and they don't. He said, no, get them to chant. Come to Mangalarti. And I'll serve them meat and eggs and wine if I have to. Get them to chant the holy name. For some time, I will feed them meat. Because I know the holy name will destroy all these things. Prabhupada told this. He was willing to actually serve eggs and all to the students in the hostel, as long as they chant. Because he had faith in the holy name. They knew that they would, after a few weeks, they'll give it up. And one friend of mine, he was with Jayananda. You know, he was famous. Everyone knows Jayananda. So Jayananda once, he was very ill. He had leukemia. So once, in the very beginning, when he went to the hospital, they were doing tests on him and everything. He was in the hospital for about a week. He had all of his intravenous tubes stuck in his arms and so forth. So a devotee came from the temple with some prasadam. And Jayananda was laying there. And when he saw the devotee, he felt very alive. He said, oh, great, you're finally, it's good. He says, okay, you got some prasadam. Oh, great. And the boy said, yeah, should I maybe serve you here? Can you have a plate? He said, no. He said, cut it all up into small pieces. He says, do you have a knife? He said, no. He goes, here, take one of these. He goes, what do you mean? He said, just do what I said. Just cut it up. Get this plate, big plate. Give him a big platter. He said, cut it up into small pieces. Okay. And he said, take these things out of my arm. Okay. Boom, boom. He pulled them out. And then he said, you have a pair of cartels. And he said, yeah. He said, okay, good. We can have a festival. And he cut up the rolled me out into the corridor, went down the corridor into the elevator. He said, where are you taking me? He said, we're going to go to the reception room, you know, the big lobby, and we're going to have a festival. So Jayananda was still in the chair. He was still in the bed, you know, he was with wheels, right? He was pushing him in the bed. And Jayananda, he sat up in the bed. And he said, okay, now distribute the prasadam to all these people and I'll chant here. Haribu. So he started sitting alone in the lobby and in the bed, you know, with his bed clothes on. He started chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. The devotees started walking around giving Mahaprasadam to everyone. Everyone was, all the nurses, all the doctors and the patients and the friends, the people were sitting there all looking and they took the prasadam and, you know, they were all, this is good. And everyone started smiling and everyone said, you know, and then some people came over and they were talking to Jayananda. He was preaching to them and, you know, he had a whole big crowd of doctors around him. Then the other devotee had a big crowd of other people around him. And all the people sitting there, they got up and they were listening like from around. And he started like a whole festival. This is like the mood of the old days, like, and this is the essence of Krishna consciousness. This is real realization. And so in other words, these things from the book, we have to imbibe them, assimilate them, and then practice them in real life with real people, and not hold back. Give everything and bring them to Krishna. This is the conclusion and the purpose of all of these things, this process of knowledge. Of course, we have our own process of knowledge, and that's bhakti. And this is how we should apply it in a very practical way. Prabhupada is very practical. We'll stop now. Srila Prabhupada ki.